all of Hermit Dan's stuff was in the way. And at that point, she drove over his hose and a bucket, and he hollered at her, "Get the fuck off my hose."
This is the All Terrain Podcast, Episode 10. I'm Mike Henderson. The voices you just heard are my guests today, Brent Hart and Sean O'Mara. These guys are two good friends from here in Reno, Nevada. We've done a lot of mountain biking together over the years, and in recent years, we've all gotten back into four-wheeling and off-roading. If you follow our YouTube channel, All Terrain Family, you might have seen Brent and Sean in the video from our family adventure on the Deer Valley Jeep Trail. If not, well, it's a real treat. You should grab a beer and check it out. You should also check out our website, where you'll find hats, patches, and stickers that will make your truck a better overlander and have been proven to prevent shock fade. Check it out at allterrainpodcast.com, and you'll never have to hear ads for mattresses and mail order kale salad on this podcast. All right, here's episode 10 with Sean O'Mara and Brent Hart talking about their adventure on the Plumas Backcountry Discovery Route in Northern California. All right, guys, how's it going? Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having us.
All right, so we're going to talk today about the Plumas National Forest Backcountry Discovery Trail. I've got this little book right here that we picked up at, I think I got this at the Plumas Ranger Station in Gray Eagle when we went to to cut down a Christmas tree. So you can find these at any of the ranger stations, or you can go online and download it from the Plumas National Forest as a PDF. It's a little spiral-bound little thing here. So this is a trip that I planned and I scheduled and I talked you guys into doing, and then I didn't go on because I was sick. So I've been super bummed and pissed, and that's why I really haven't asked you guys about it, because I was like, screw those guys.
So you now must have been really sick.
Yeah, now you're here and we're going to talk about it. So so generally the map is there are seven maps and seven sections in this. It goes from basically La Porte, California to Lake Almanor, through Quincy and Spring Garden, along the Feather River. So where did you guys start this trail this time?
Well, I think we kind of changed it up a little bit. Instead of starting in La Porte, we started in Downeyville.
Downeyville, okay.
And we took the trail from Downeyville to Poker Flat and stayed the first night in Poker Flat and then drove to La Porte the next day.
Okay. Then I said a good campground. How's the drive from Downeyville to Poker Flat? Is that long and boring?
Not at all. Actually, it turned out to be the I thought it was the best part of the trip. It's fire road, but right from the highway it climbs right from the highway, and you're in dense forest, and you know it's a Forest Service road, and I think actually a mine back there maintains the road. But so it's in pretty good shape, and about halfway through the trip, there's a fire lookout.
Oh, okay, on that road to Poker Flat.
On the road to Poker Flat, and so we didn't know anything about it, and we thought, hey, let's take this right turn and go check it out. Huh. And glad we did.
Yeah, that was one of the highlights, was that fire lookout, and they keep somebody staffed up there. He stays up there 24/7 for I think a 10-day shift. And super friendly, and showed us everything about the fire lookout, and showed us the different peaks, and pointed at the road that we needed to go on to continue over to Poker Flat.
Cool. Is that a nice campground, Poker Flat?
Poker Flat's an interesting campground.
It's like an OHV staging area, right?
It's an OHV campground. There's, what, maybe five spots?
Max. It's not really a staging area. It's just a OHV campground, but it's real popular with some miners. There's a couple claims back there. So the only other people at the campground were miners with active claims.
Huh.
It's right on a creek.
Okay.
So there's water running by there. And I enjoyed it, actually.
Cool.
Right at the bottom of a ravine. So the road, going back to the road across to Poker Flat, after we left the fire lookout station, got real sort of technical. Nice descent down into Poker Flat. It's basically a big V.
Huh.
And what was the sign that we saw? You're on your own. Travel at your own risk. No,
no cell phone coverage. No tow. Travel at your own risk.
Yep.
Basically. They have that same thing at Lippincott Road in Death Valley. Mm-hmm. Same sort of thing. So let's back up a little bit. I forgot to do this part. A little house cleaning. What? Tell me about your. Tell our viewers, our listeners, because I know. But tell me about your truck and who was with you on this trip, Sean.
So this was the first trip in my new to me vehicle. It's a 2012 Ram Power Wagon. I had a Wrangler, wasn't working for our particular situation. Then I had an F-150, and of course, that wasn't working. So I finally found a used Power Wagon. Because it would tow our RV trailer, because it comes with lockers and disconnected sway bar and 456 gears. So it was it's a box stock Power Wagon.
Cool. You've since made some other mods, but they weren't on there at the time. But
right at the trip, it was box stock. It's I've modded a little bit since then.
Right. It was just you and Emmett, right?
And the dog.
And the dog. And Brent, who's with you? In what?
My entire family fit into a 2015 Jeep Wrangler JK. My family consists of my wife, Rachel, and our 13-year-old son, Sam, and our 80-pound Labradoodle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not insignificant.
So picture that, if you will.
In the JK. You had, right before this, we helped you put that roof rack on, so that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, this was a big trip for us. You know, previously we have a pop-up tent trailer that for the past 9 years we've pretty much camped in it and out of it at basic standard campsites. So this was a new experience for us and going without the trailer. So the big test was how do I fit my whole family and our gear, food, water, everything that we needed into this Jeep. And so you hit it on the head. The answer was Sean was nice enough to volunteer and help me install a new roof rack.
Right. And that wasn't simple. I mean, we had to pull the lid was off of that thing on the floor of the garage, bolting things up, drilling holes in it. It was brutal.
Sean was confident. I was a little skeptical about drilling holes in the roof.
Right.
I had already put one of these racks in my Jeep, so I was pretty confident with Brent's. But it was classic to see the look on his face when I was running a unibit through the roof of his Jeep's roof.
That was fun. So cool. So you got a Rhino rack, a platform rack, and you threw some strapped some stuff up on there overland style. Did you put your Did you put your Max Tracks up there, or those go inside because they're just too nice?
They went up on top.
Okay.
Bungee quartered them right to the top, and basically all my soft goods that you know could afford to get wet if it rained went up on top. Things like sleeping pads, mm-hmm. and chairs, you know, fold up chairs. Had a couple boxes. Actually carried all of our kitchenware. All our pots and pans, coffee maker, and everything in a Front Runner box.
Yeah, the Wolf boxes. Those are nice.
Wolf box. Yeah. Had two of those. One carried food and one carried our cooking gear. Mm-hmm. And that went up on the roof. So anything light that could afford to get wet went up on top.
Cool. All right, so back into it. We're at Poker Flat Campground. And then one of the things that we were worried about initially trying to find information on was, wasn't it, we were worried about Poker Flat to La Porte. Did that end up being challenging?
It was fun. I wouldn't say it was that challenging. It was fun. I want to back up because there was an interesting story that kind of set the tone for Brent's wife, Rachel, the rest of the trip. Before we got to Poker Flat, we're on the steep descent that Brent was talking about earlier, and we get to this old YJ Jeep. Probably late 90s. It was in good shape, except one of the rear hubs had snapped off. Ouch. So we see this Jeep abandoned on the side of the road with its wheel next to it, with its snapped off hub. And they actually got the they put some type of steel piece of metal underneath the hub and drove it off the road. It looked very dramatic, and I remember Rachel saying, "Could that happen to our Jeep?" So no, the rest dear. Of the trip, yeah, she was concerned that
she kicked, she get out and kick the tires every time.
Yeah,
every time. So
and then there was a nice little creek crossing into the campground before we camped.
Cool, sounds good.
Can you tell them? You know, you got some intel from the miners.
Oh yeah,
they say you'll never get that Dodge up that trail.
Right. So the next morning we had a lot of fun at the campground. I really enjoyed that campground. There's one building, or what's left of a building, from the ghost town, and we had fun that night. You know, we sat at the creek and in chairs and drank cocktails and watched the kids playing the dirt. Brent's 13-year-old son Sam is really good with my 4-year-old son, so they had a lot of fun. And then the next morning we woke up, and as we're getting ready, then I went over at that point and talked to some of the crusty old miners there in camp. And when he realized that I told him we were going to La Porte, he looked over and at my truck and said, "Oh, not with that, you're not." I'm sure he didn't know the difference between that, that truck and any other pickup, not knowing, what a power wagon is. But, I was confident. You know, that road is leaving Poker Flat is steep and rocky with some tight sections. We did get some video. I think the only thing that I did was smash a hubcap.
Those things were meant to be
very,
smashed.
Very loudly. But yeah, it was a fun road up. I mean, once we got through the really steep section, it was just kind of a rough dirt road all the way up to La Porte.
So you go down to Poker Flat and then back up to La Porte. Poker Flat's on Canyon. It's on Canyon Creek, according to this map.
It's essentially a V, and the campground's right at the bottom of the V. You go down, and then you camp there, and then you go right back up.
Can you get to? Is it close to any of the Downeyville riding from there? Pretty far from that.
Yeah, I don't. I can't think of any rides that would be over there.
Yeah, I would say we're to the south of Downeyville, the town.
So okay.
I think all the riding takes north. West. West of town, and most of the riding takes place to the east.
Didn't we cross one bike trail on the way up to the fire lookout? I thought there at one point there was a bike trail across the road. I could be wrong, but
I didn't see that.
So, looking at the guidebook here, there's a St. Louis Bridge and Eureka Tunnel. There's a town site and a cemetery and a mine. Any places to stop and look at historic stuff around there?
Yeah, I mean, after we climbed out of Poker Flat, we ran across a ghost town, an old cemetery. I can't remember the name of the little establishment. There was tons of history there. There were signs to read. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, that was probably one of the highlights of the trip. That cemetery was really cool. The out in the middle of nowhere, there's just all these amazing headstones, and most of the grave sites are still fenced in. And the crazy thing is two of the graves were somewhat modern. If I remember right, the last one was from 1989, wasn't it?
Huh.
And there was also one from the 60s. So somebody had taken their relative back there and buried him and threw up a headstone.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it's they like have a like property back there or family connection.
I had actually read in some other books that people had actually inhabited the area until recently.
Hmm.
And a thread that I was reading, generations or people reflecting on the area I grew up there, kind of scenario. So it's interesting.
Cool. It's a really remote area, even the first day in.
Oh yeah.
So the first map, which we just talked about, is La Porte Poker Flat, which is not numbered in the book. It's sort of like an optional thing. Although if you go by the route, it takes a long time to get to La Porte, any way you go, and then you have to turn around and come back the same way.
And that was, I think, that was our reasoning behind starting at Downeyville. If we were gonna take the time to drive to the port. Let's just do it on dirt and do the Poker Flat to La Port Road one direction, right, rather than doing it out, right, and back.
And it sounds like that was a good decision.
Yeah, it was. I would recommend anybody who's to do this is to add the day and do that section of trail from Downingville to La Port.
Cool. So the second map, labeled number one in the book at least, is La Port to Harrison Flat, which looks like, is that a, I think that it's paved road mostly. Is that paved road or dirt road? Or is it good dirt road?
It was paved road out of La Port.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then it was just fairly smooth Forest Service road after that.
Okay. That kind of winds around. There's a couple of historic marks, Gibsonville, Sawmill Ridge, Pacific Crest Trail crossing, and columnar jointing. Did you see the columnar jointing? That's like Devil's Post pile, big columns of.
We did.
We looked for that, didn't we? Is that the, no? That was the day before.
Yeah, I think we saw that, but we didn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, we felt like we needed to get moving forward so that we could find our next camp spot,
right,
to camp that night.
Where did you end up camping that night?
Was it Harrison Flat where
go ahead, Sean.
Yeah.
I've heard part of the story.
We had actually pinpointed Harrison Flat as a potential camp spot that night.
Right.
And of course, when we got there, it wasn't exactly what we had hoped for, but
yeah,
it was flat, right?
Well, there's, so that's the thing, is any section in there is marked flat is because it literally is the only piece of flat ground in the area. Everything is very hilly, but we were heading towards Harrison Flat, and right as we got there, I didn't realize I was passing it, and this old guy was on the road, and this is literally out in the middle of nowhere, and he kind of moved out of the way and waved, and I CB'd back to Brent and Rachel, hey, watch out for random old guy, and they didn't see him at that point. He had ducked back into the trees. Well,
he vanished.
Oh.
But then we realized that we passed Harrison Flat, and we turned around and went back, and then we stumbled upon this old guy, who we'll call Hermit Dan. We eventually found out his name was Dan, but a way off the road where you couldn't see, he had a whole encampment. He was dug in deep. He had an old RV that was not roadworthy, that was basically all dug in. He had a bunch of permanent features, and he had basically taken over Harrison Flat as his own little encampment. We drove in, and there was a loop in front of his RV that at some point would have been a campsite, and Rachel, because the Jeep was so loaded down she couldn't see behind her, she attempted to drive around the loop rather than stopping and backing up. We pulled in and saw all this encampment. We saw Hermit Dan and Hermit Dan's dog. And but as she got into the loop, all of Hermit Dan's stuff was in the way. And at that point, she drove over his hose and a bucket, and he hollered at her, "Get the fuck off my hose." and Brent is stuck in the back of his Jeep, so he doesn't even know what's going on. And I had already decided to back out, so I was already in reverse backing out. She managed to get around the loop, and we went back out towards the road and came up with a game plan, but we definitely were not staying at Hermit Flat that night.
Harrison Flat.
Run.
Hermit
Flat. It's Hermit Flat now. I eventually did walk back and talk to the guy, because he said, oh, he cooled off and came back out and offered that we could stay there. But I know for sure Rachel was not comfortable with that.
She was having no part of that. We were moving on from there.
Right. Yeah. You were done.
So ultimately, we traveled, I don't know what, another 18, 20 miles down the road?
Yeah, something like that.
Uh-huh. And found a nice, just...
sunny spot.
Mm-hmm, on a ridge.
Keep in mind, it's October, and the temps, you know, the highs were in the 50s.
Yeah.
And the sun goes down, it gets cold, so we found a nice sunny spot in a clearing.
Mm-hmm.
And
you guys did this the first week of October, right?
Yes.
First. Did you leave Saturday? Or Friday?
Saturday morning.
Friday, yeah. And came back Wednesday.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's called fall break for our kids at school.
I remember not feeling super crappy on Tuesday. and being like, anyway. All right, so LaPorte to Harrison Flat. Harrison, next section is Harrison Flat to Highway 70, which did you guys go all the way back out to Highway 7? Because it makes like a big dog leg east and then comes all the way back.
I would say we were probably in between Harrison Flat and Highway 70 camped that night.
Okay.
But yeah, we did go all the way to Highway 70 because there's a river there. We never did find a place to cross the river to shortcut it. So we went all the way out.
It's the Feather River at that
Which leads to another story. We just pulled over looking for the turnoff. Oh, yeah. I think Brent forgot about this one. We were parked along the side of Highway 70 just looking at our maps, and a highway patrolman, a CHP, passed us, and I don't even know why I noticed him. But then before we took off again, he had turned around and was pulling up behind me. And, you know, at first, it was just odd the way he came up. He was obviously very cautious and somewhat defensive and, you know, asked me what we were doing. And it struck me as strange because, you know, we were obviously just two families on a trip, and I don't know why he felt the need that he had to turn around and stop and investigate what was going on. And even after I told him, he looked very tentative. So that was strange. He did at least tell me where the turnoff was.
Yeah.
He didn't like say he was looking for somebody or?
Nope. Few words.
He did a quick inspection of your cargo in the back of your truck.
He did. He looked my truck up and down really good, and despite the fact that I had a 4-year-old boy and a greyhound in a back seat and looked very innocuous, there must have been something that caught his attention.
I wouldn't say Emmett looks innocuous. I wouldn't trust the guy. Anyway. Okay.
He told us where to turn, which is very nice.
Yeah, the turn is near Lee Summit.
Lee Summit, at least correct. On this map. We thought maybe we had passed it already, but right. It turned out we hadn't gone far enough.
Okay.
Part of the fun of this whole trip is navigating the map. And there's Forest Service roads everywhere out there.
Yeah. Were you using the paper maps, or did you guys pull up GPS of any kind or iPhone? I mean, no, we're not super technical. I don't think you guys even have, like, GPS, but did you pull up an app? A GPS app, at least?
No. We were just using the book and paper maps.
And the big Plumas map. Yeah. It's like as big as this room.
It was kind of, you know, cross-referencing that map to the book and figuring it out.
Right. Because the new map that they have is, like, they come up with a whole bunch of new U.S. or Forest Service maps for Plumas. That one looks like brand new. And I know there's new ones for Toyabe, too, around here.
It actually comes with the, I call it the BDT trail.
Yeah.
It's already highlighted on the map.
Yeah, it's highlighted. Yeah. The resolution is a pretty big map.
Yeah.
So you really got to look close. Yeah. But,
the Forest Service really does a good job out there marking all the roads with signs and numbers so you can reference the map.
Cool. Any interesting things to note on that section, which is Harrison Flat to Highway 70? So the next section is Highway 70 to Redbridge, which Redbridge looked like it was going to be a pretty neat spot. There's a campground there.
We had sort of earmarked that as a potential. There's an official Forest Service campground there. We had figured maybe camping one night at Harrison Flat and then the next night at Redbridge. But the way it worked out, we just the next day ended up bypassing Redbridge and kept moving forward.
Okay. Doesn't look like there's a whole lot on this particular section.
Nope.
And this section is 12 miles. So this is the third map, so the fourth section. 12.8 miles, 2 hours, not including stops. So you probably bypassed. I mean, these aren't broken up by day necessarily.
No, just by maps in the book.
Right. In the next section, Redbridge to East Quincy, looks like Little Volcano. Did you stop at Little Volcano? East Claremont. Claremont Peak.
Actually bypassed around that. I think that was an out and back sort of situation.
We didn't do the Little Volcano, and I think before we got to Quincy was actually where we started having, where we had a mechanical. What was the campground that we stayed at after Highway 70 down to that creek?
Was that Rock Creek?
Rock Creek. So we stayed at, we passed Red Bridge and we stayed at Rock Creek. And that was actually a pretty nice little campground.
So the mechanical happened before.
Before Rock Creek or after? I thought it was
before
after.
Before Rock Creek.
When did we decide? No, it was after Rock Creek because we left Rock Creek and we're going to Quincy. And we were going to go up over that summit, the other technical section.
Oh, I see Rock Creek. It's over here. Yep.
You worked on your Jeep at Rock Creek.
Correct.
That's right.
So what went wrong?
So
did the wheel fall off?
The wheel didn't. But Rachel was worried the wheel was going to fall off.
She kicked it too hard.
Keep in mind, we had already seen a Jeep with a wheel that had fallen off and had been pushed off the side of the trail. So we were cruising along and just starting this more technical section of the trail. See, the BDT trail is, for the most part, can be done by high clearance, two-wheel drive, four-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. There's nothing super technical, but they have
a Subaru.
The featured vehicle.
Most of it a Subaru could do.
Featured vehicles here are an Explorer and 4Runners, of course the 4Runner can do it.
Typical stock SUV, no problem.
Right.
But they also have 4x4 alternate routes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of bypassed the volcano. We were excited to get back to the 4x4 alternative routes. And we had just started up along that 4x4 route and, driving along. And I heard from the rear suspension a big sort of crunch.
Clunking.
Clunk.
The classic clunk.
Yeah, when I hit a rock, it clunked. And so my wife was skittish and said, "What's that?" I don't know. So I kept driving. Let's see if we hear it again.
Right. It'll work itself out.
it'll work itself out.
It's probably just a pine cone.
So we kept driving and, next bump in the trail, clunk. And again, she's like, "What is that?" I said, "I don't know." I radioed back to Sean and said, "Hey, we got, let's check out. I got a noise. Let's check it out." And, it's hard to find a noise when you're stopped, right?
Right, yeah.
Unless something is obviously wrong. I crawled under there and, you just do a visual inspection.
Well, that's why I have a drone now, so I can fly the drone underneath your car while you're driving.
While you're driving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. And ultimately, Sean says, we're just going to have to throw a wrench on all the bolts under there and see what you can come up with, see if there's anything loose. So I did that, and... everything seemed snug. Everything seemed tight, except for there was one U-bolt on my lift kit.
Oh, no. I think I'd have to disagree with you on that. I mean, the U-bolt was definitely very loose, but you were getting quarter and half turns off of everything back there that first round.
Yeah.
It wasn't until we got back to Rock Creek.
It should be hard to get a quarter turn off of a properly tightened
suspension
bolt,
the way his lift kit works, just like most JKs, there's a bracket that relocates the rear track bar, and it has a big U-bolt.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has a couple smaller bolts, and that was the one that was unbelievably loose.
Really?
It was, yeah. So ultimately, I think what the issue was, that whole assembly was loose, but he, Brent can tell you further, he got a bunch of turns out of that.
Yeah.
So, I tightened everything as much as I could, figuring, okay, this has to be the problem. So we got back in the vehicles and started to proceed down the trail, and sure enough, clunk, that noise again. And, by this time, we're like, oh, that's frustrating. I mean, I thought we had the problem solved and still have the same noise. So, Rachel really wanted to play safe than sorry and end up like that Jeep that we saw earlier. And so we abandoned the trail. We turned around and took a shortcut across the pavement.
Okay.
And went back into Quincy, or not back into Quincy, but went to Quincy for the first time.
Right.
And Sean had remembered there was a Les Schwab tire center there. So we, long story short, pulled in there. It actually, the clunk sounded like maybe a wheel was loose or the lug nuts were loose. So I had them check that out with a torque wrench, and sure enough, they torqued it down and said there was nothing loose there.
Well, we were at a junction. We had just gotten to a junction where we could abandon and go down to Quincy on a fairly easy road,
right?
Or we would take the left and go up over the four-wheel drive alternate route. So when we went down to at that junction was when we realized we wanted to check the wheel hub, but we didn't have a lug wrench for Brent's splined. Brent had Pro Comp wheels that has a splined lug on it.
Huh.
So we couldn't check the lug nuts there.
Oh, like a lock nut or something for the
no, wheels? Those Pro Comp wheels have aftermarket lugs. All the lug nuts
uh-huh.
aren't standard lug nuts.
Oh.
So we didn't have a splined lug wrench. So that was on Brent's to get list.
Which I do. Well, I did. However, I could not find it.
Oh, okay.
So that's when we chose to go into the Les Schwab and at least throw a wrench on those lug nuts to make sure his wheel wasn't coming loose or something like that. And then from Quincy was when we decided to drive up to...
We took pavement over to Rock Creek Campground.
Okay, that's on the map here. Yep.
That's right.
And it was about 4 miles off the pavement out of Quincy.
And, okay, I see that road.
You know, no noise with the Jeep on the pavement, no noise on the easy dirt roads. But that night, Sean broke out his tools again, and I started going back on the bolts. And sure enough, I can get more turns on those U-bolts.
Huh.
So I think what happens is, you know, I can get them as tight as I could with the wrenches, and then once we drove it, it would shift.
Oh.
And
it was so loose the first time that when he tightened it, it wasn't completely settled in.
So was the track bar like moving back and forth or something? Like, so when it mm-hmm. went up, the track bar would compress and slide down the axle or something?
It was more of the bracket and the U-bolt shifting on the axle housing.
Okay. Interesting.
So that night I got more turns on it and cranked it again as hard as I could and just had to roll with that.
Has it ever clunked since then?
It has not. In fact, we went the rest of the way of the trip and didn't have any problems. So I think it was a matter of cranking, driving it, let it settle, cranking again, let it settle and crank some more.
How many miles did your Jeep have on at that time?
30,000.
Okay, so he had put the lift kit on. He had the dealer put the lift kit on brand new. So this is a lesson to everybody.
Right.
Brand new Jeep, brand new lift kit installed by the dealer. 30,000 miles, maybe at, for future reference, at 20,000-25,000, take a wrench and go underneath right. your vehicle.
You think pull the bolts out and put new Loctite on them or something? I can't imagine.
No, you wouldn't want to pull them out. You just want to, because most of that stuff had aircraft nuts on it.
Oh, okay.
So you wouldn't want to pull them back off. But I think just cinching everything back down, you're at least checking it. And then if there is a problem where you have to completely take it apart, then at that point you could rather than doing it on the trail.
All right. I'm going to cut them off here for now. There's more to this story, and you'll hear about the rest of the Plumas Backcountry Discovery route next time. Let us know what you think about this show with a comment wherever you feel like commenting. YouTube, the show notes at allterrainpodcast.com, or Instagram, or Facebook, or, you know, drive to the top of a hill and honk your comments out in Morse code. The All Terrain Podcast is created by me, Mike Henderson, at Reno Collective, a co-working space in Reno, Nevada. If you have something to say, look into a podcast membership where you'll get access to this studio with mics and a mixer. We also have podcasting classes and workshops taught by Chris Webster, producer of the Archaeology Podcast Network. If that's not enough, check out the Northern Nevada Podcasters Group on the Facebook. Thanks for listening.